President Marcos invites businessmen in America to invest in the Philippines. The Senate Majority Leader seeking to ban all forms of online gambling amid crimes linked to POGOs. The Philippine Central Bank seen to hike interest rates by 50 basis points. And an infectious diseases expert believes the Philippines is still far from ending the pandemic. We'll get the take of Dr. Maricar Limpin of the Philippine College of Physicians later on in the program. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Topping the midday news, President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. woos American investors as he visited the New York Stock Exchange Monday. Here's Pia Gutierrez with the details.
President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. on Tuesday noted the importance of strengthening bilateral relations between the Philippines and the United States amid ongoing geopolitical and economic uncertainties. The president made a statement as he addressed global investors, traders, and Philippine business leaders in an afternoon forum at the New York Stock Exchange, where he was invited as guest. And in a chat with the New York Stock Exchange Vice Chairman John Tuttle, Marcos says he intends to further deepen bilateral ties with the U.S. during his term, noting that he cannot overstate the economic and political ties between both countries.
I cannot see the Philippines in the future without having the United States as a partner. Many of the drivers of our early economy were actually American corporations. Many of the strongest corporate benefactors, really, to government and to the rest of society in the Philippines were coming from the United States. They provide the stability in this highly unstable economic, political, geopolitical, diplomatic environment. This is something that is central to our thinking when it comes to the economic planning for the Philippines.
Marcos Jr., meanwhile, in his speech, presented the Philippines as a viable investment destination to potential American investors, noting that the country continues to bounce back from the pandemic, with the Philippine economy seeing robust growth since last year.
To international investors, the Philippines offers high-quality labor, a large consumer market, and a wide range of fiscal and non-fiscal incentives. At the same time, we remain committed to maintaining sound macroeconomic fundamentals, providing a clear development roadmap. For American businesses, we offer investment opportunities in areas such as information technology and business process management, or IT-BPM, medical products and devices, electric vehicles and batteries, agribusiness and telecommunications infrastructure and services.
The president says his administration is committed to support economic recovery through sound macroeconomic policies, as well as commitment to fiscal discipline, which he says will also help the Philippines become a middle-income country during his term. After the forum, the president, assisted by Tuttle, rang the ceremonial bell at the New York Stock Exchange trading floor, signaling the end of trading for the day. Prior to this, the president met with several American companies, including nuclear energy company NuScale, the company Waste Fuel, and Boeing. Other business engagements line up for the six-day state visit of the president are dialogues with the U.S. ASEAN Business Council and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, as well as the Philippine Economic Briefing happening on September 22.
And still on the NYSE Business Forum, Marcos said young workers and migrant laborers are key reasons to be optimistic about the future of the Philippines. He says the labor and economic manpower of the Philippines is the country's greatest asset.
It is something that we have seen succeed with our overseas Filipino workers, but also in the development of the more sophisticated businesses that have come to the country. We are, I believe, the youngest country in Asia, and with the graying of other countries around the region, This gives us an advantage.
And they are ready to take up the cudgels. They are ready to work for the country. They are ready to do what needs to be done to bring the country forward.
Private Sector Advisory Council and convener, or council convener rather, and Abuetis Group President Sabin Abuetis also addressed the NYSE Business Forum. Abuetis reminded investors of what the Philippines has to offer, saying the country remains one of Asia's fastest growing economies. The Biden administration looks to enhance its economic cooperation with the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai says Washington is committed to work with ASEAN in areas such as trade facilitation and labor to help build back pandemic hit supply chains and make them more resilient, inclusive, sustainable, moving forward. She also looks forward to increased trade between the U.S. and ASEAN members. U.S. goods and services trade with the ASEAN totaled nearly $442 billion in 2021. That's a 22% increase compared to the previous year. Moving on, a party-less lawmaker questions the 2 trillion peso special purpose fund in the proposed 5.2 trillion peso budget in 2023. House Deputy Minority Leader and ACT Teachers Party List Representative Franz Castro says the SPF contains allocations that should be more transparent, as some can be considered as lump sums. Castro flagged the 28 billion peso allocation for the local government support funds, which covers, among others, programs to end local insurgency, support for capital outlays, and social programs.
Normal naman itong special purpose fund, pero kakaiba ngayong sanep dahil lalong-lalo na itong mga LGSF na ito, itong mga BSGC na ito, yung budget support to government corporation. So talagang malalaki. Kailangan ipaliwanag ito ng DBCC kung ano yung mga itemization nito. Kasi hindi pwedeng pagkatapos ng budget deliberation at ma-terminate na yung ano at ma-approve itong budget na to, saka lang nilalagyan ito.
Senate Majority Leader Joel Villanueva has filed a bill seeking to ban all forms of online gambling in the Philippines. Villanueva's proposed Anti-Online Gambling Act seeks to penalize violators with up to 6 months in jail and with a fine of up to 500,000 pesos. There have been mounting calls to banish Philippine offshore gaming operators or POGOs following another series of alleged abductions and killings linked to Chinese syndicates and POGO workers. Senate Minority Leader Coco Pimentel is in favor of the POGO ban. He adds, the continued operation of POGOs is akin to harboring would-be criminals that could disrupt peace and order.
If we allow POGO, ibig sabihin nun, there will be legal POGO. Doon nakakapasok under cover of a legal POGO. Feedback sa amin yun na mga law enforcer nahirapan sila malaman sino ang legal POGO at saka sino ang illegal na POGO. Tapos discrimination naman kung lahat ng foreigners na itsura o Chinese looking diyan ay hihintuin nila at tatanungin. Mas magandang palisiya, mas madali sa law enforcement, ay mas madaling i-enforce wholesale. Pagbawalan na po.
Businesses and other stakeholders are in favor of expanding remote work arrangements, but a group calls on the Labor Department to address other issues confronting workers. Joyce Balancha gives us details.
27-year-old Jay Morales has been working as an IT consultant under a hybrid work setup for more than 3 years. He goes to his office for 2 to 3 days, and on some days, he works from home. Jay admits this incurs more expenses for his family, but he still prefers this work arrangement than working on-site full-time.
Yes, beneficial siya. I am readily available to my family as soon as they need me in terms of emergencies. Some of the household chores, I need to have a routine, not just for myself, but for my wife and for my kid as well. Once I enter this room, my office area, they know that I'd be starting to work. And as soon as I get out of it, it's time for family.
Under the new order of the Department of Labor and Employment, Secretary Bienvenido Laguesma said that employers can still implement remote work programs such as work from home and other alternative work arrangements amid the continuous threat of the COVID-19 virus. The order also expanded the definition of the alternative workplace as any location where work through the use of telecommunication is performed. These may include but not limited to the employee's residence, co-working spaces, and other areas where mobile working is allowed. Employers are in favor of the new order as long as it will be voluntary.
Basta huwag lang compulsory. So kahit patagalin mo nila yan, okay lang yan. It just protect the rights of those who are already working. We're just encouraged, hindi pinipilit. So okay lang yun. Mm-hmm. Okay lang yun. Basta at the end of the day, it's the choice of the company whether they would like it or not.
Labor group Kilosang Mayo Uno also agrees with the intent of the DOLI order but insists that government should also address other issues confronting workers.
While we appreciate itong immediate moves ng Department of Labor, yung kailangan talaga bigyan ng kagyat na pagtugon ng gobyerno, no, through its lead agency nga, ay yung demand namin for a national minimum wage, yung wage increase, pagbabasura sa eskemang kontraktualisasyon, yung ito na, na yung occupational safety and health, at yung tumitinding trade union and human rights violation.
The Trade Union Congress of the Philippines, or TUCP, said there should be a mechanism for workers to raise complaints if they face abuse or unfair labor practices during these alternative work arrangements.
What is critical is that workers know that they have the right. Second, that this is a precautionary language that's needed in the department order to prevent corporate impunity, yung pag-aabuso ng mga employers sa kanilang mga work from home workers, ano? They could be subjected to unreasonable quotas, unreasonable demands for that are based on quotas or on extension of their work hours beyond 8 hours. Marami hong consequences if workers cannot raise complaints.
TUCP also encourages the government to give incentives to companies that provide allowances for internet and electricity expenses and other support to workers. The IT and Business Process Association of the Philippines believes that work from home and hybrid setups will be a contributing factor for them to create 1.1 million additional jobs for Filipinos, as well as generate more revenues in the industry. Joyce Balancho, ABS-CBN News.
In other news, the Philippines logged 3,119 new COVID-19 cases Monday. That's the highest daily tally in over a week. Over 27,000 infections remain active. Independent research group OCTA says while a lot of provinces in Luzon have seen an improvement with their COVID positivity rates, the National Capital Region and nearby areas have shown increases. That's why a health expert in the Philippines believes the end of the pandemic is not yet within reach.
Although mas mababa ang mga kaso natin ngayon kumpara noong January or noong September last year, pero tuloy-tuloy pa rin na meron tayong community transmission, especially with this BA.5 variant. Bumababa ang bisa ng mga bakuna 6 to 8 months after. So ibig sabihin, there's a possibility na pwede tayong magkahawaan pa rin. So I think isa yan sa mga nakikita sa mga expert ngayon na baka merong annual vaccination or biannual vaccination sa mga vulnerable, siguro ang magiging priority dyan kung meron man tayong annual vaccination.
The Philippine Health Department says it still cannot say for sure whether the increase in COVID cases can be attributed to the eased face mask rule. Last week, President Marcos allowed the optional wearing of face masks in outdoor settings. Amid the spike in infections, the DOH stresses the importance of maintaining a low number of severe and critical COVID cases. And just how far is the Philippines from ending this pandemic, and what will it take
to get us to that point. Joining us now is Dr. Maricar Limpin. She's the immediate past president of the Philippines College of Physicians. Dr. Limpin, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today. Nice to see you again. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning, Carmina, and good morning to everyone.
All right, so we just heard from U.S. President Joe Biden. I think he said that a couple of days back. He said the pandemic is over, at least for the United States. How near is the Philippines to being in that same level?
Actually, we don't see the end yet as of now. No? Unlike in the U.S., probably Joe Biden said that they are already at the end. But I guess even among the health experts in the U.S., they all agree that the end of the pandemic is still not there. They are still not there. So the same with here in our country. You know, the highest rate now in the as far as COVID cases, positivity rate is there in the U.S. They actually, if I'm not mistaken, they rank number one. So I don't know how Joe Biden would be able to say that they are already at the end of the pandemic. And then if you look at the case fatality rate, no, the case fatality rate is also very high. In the Philippines, I think we are ranked number five, you know, in the number of cases of COVID-19. And our case fatality rate is also a little bit higher, no? Mm-hmm. So
that's what I wanted to ask you, Dr. Limpin, because when you look at the numbers in the U.S., their numbers are up there. When you talk about mortality rate, when you talk about infections, you know, when you talk about, you know, the positivity rate, their numbers are up there. So how can a country with those numbers actually declare that the pandemic is over for them, whereas here in the Philippines, our numbers are not as high, and yet we cannot, or we still do not see the end in sight in terms of the pandemic for us here locally, Dr. Limpin?
Yeah, but, you know, Carmina, that is actually a statement issued by the president of the country, who does not really, whom we can actually say he is not an expert as far as health is concerned. So I think I will actually look at what Dr. Fauci is saying. And Dr. Fauci is actually also saying the same statement that we are issuing here, that we are not actually seeing the end of the pandemic yet. We need to look at the positivity rate, but not only the positivity rate, no, but we also have to look at the number of people that are dying from COVID-19. And if the death rate, the case fatality rate is still a little bit high, then we cannot really consider that we are already at the end of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But we have to also admit to the fact that the numbers compared to before, no, anywhere in the world is actually lower, no. So with that, having said that, then I think that we can actually say that we are on the way to recovery, no. So we are on the way to the end of the pandemic, but for us to say that we are at the end of the pandemic, it's too premature. And that is why we keep on saying that we cannot be complacent at this point. We need to continue whatever we are doing in protecting the people from this infection so that we will be able to reach the end sooner than expected. No?
So, Dr. Limpin, for someone who sees things, for someone who has stared this pandemic straight into its eye, when you hear statements coming from a very powerful nation, the leader of a powerful nation, coming on the heels of the leader of the WHO saying that the pandemic is in sight, the end of the pandemic is in sight, how much does that frustrate you and the rest of our frontliners who continue to battle this pandemic on the ground?
Yes, so actually, so that is one of the, you know, frustrating things, no, to hear that, you know, for people who are not really battling on the ground, no, to be hearing them that they are already seeing the end of the pandemic. But in fairness to the WHO, they are just saying that they are seeing the end of the pandemic. And actually, I can agree with that. We are already seeing that we are very near the end of the pandemic. But as Dr. Tedros also said, no, we cannot be complacent at this point. That is also the last statement. So I think we need to give emphasis to that we cannot be complacent, that we need to continue, you know, whatever we are doing in order to provide maximum protection to our people. And that will be wearing the face mask and also, you know, ramping our vaccination program.
Talking about not being complacent, Dr. Lim Pin, what are you seeing on the ground that still leads you to think that we shouldn't let our guard down? What are the cases that you're seeing right now?
Yeah, actually, we are now seeing, unlike, you know, maybe last January, well, we are also seeing some patients who are being admitted, no severe. But right now, we are also seeing a little bit more of the elderly, no, coming in, getting severe COVID, no. And these are, you know, these are people that have not been going out, no, but still got infected. You know, I think the main reason for that is because, you know, we already have a lot of the children going out, and whenever the children would probably be eating, and most likely whenever they eat, they, of course, no, they would be removing their face mask, and it cannot be helped that the children will always play around, will talk, no, and this is actually one very good means of really transmitting the infection. And once they get infected, the children, particularly the older ones, no, they may not actually have the severe symptoms, no, probably they may even be asymptomatic. They bring the virus to their homes, and lo and behold, you know, the seniors in the house and those with comorbid conditions will get infected, you know, because all of us at home, we do not already wear our face mask at home. And even for me, I don't already wear face mask at home. So it is very important that when we go out, this is actually the time to make sure that we wear the face mask so that we don't bring the infection home. So right. I think that is the best that we can do. And then, of course, making sure everybody gets infected. You know, a lot of these people who are getting severe, and also, you know, they are being intubated, they are being placed on respirators. I'm seeing them right now, no? And it's kind of frustrating because, you know, I would love not to see anyone getting severe infection, but I am still seeing them right now. And actually, dati wala na eh, no? Pero
Dr. Lim Pin, itong cases na nakikita nyo ngayon, the severe cases, the cases that need intubation, were these people vaccinated?
The even seniors, they were vaccinated with primary vaccinations, but no boosters. So many of them really do not have the boosters, if not no vaccination at all. No, and these are people who are really quite old, no, mga 80s, no, and then the others are really immunocompromised, those with HIVs, those with a controlled diabetes. These are people that are getting intubated. And of course, no, for us healthcare workers, we do not want to lose patients as much as possible. And so if we are seeing these cases now, then that means that it highlights the importance of making sure that every Filipinos get the maximum protection that they can get. And that can only be achieved through vaccination, no? And I have to make it clear, no, that vaccine is really a very important component or measure, no, intervention that will be able to give protection to our people, and of course the wearing of the face mask.
Yeah, so get, and of course get your booster shots if you can. If you're eligible, just get your booster shots right now. Dr. Lim Pin, you know, in the past couple of weeks there has been talk about the state of calamity being lifted pretty soon, right? But we've heard from the DOH as to the effects of this on the management of this pandemic. But I want to hear from you, one of the frontliners out there. If that state of calamity is lifted, what kind of an impact do you think will that have on the services and on the public who need those services. Go ahead.
Yes, Carmina, we need to make sure that we prepare first, no, for the lifting of the state of calamity, you know, in the country. So what are the things that we need to do to prepare? Number one, make sure that the antiviral medications, no, that we can actually give to our patients, particularly the elderly, the immunocompromised, they will be made available when we need them. But and to make that happen, no, we have to make sure that these antiviral medications, the ones who are manufacturing them, they have to get the certificate of product registration. So parang katulad lang yan ng mga iniinom nating mga gamot for hypertension, diabetes, no? So they need to get the certificate of product registration. So right now, I don't know where we are right at this point in time, no, kung meron na bang pharma companies na nakapag-register. You know, if I am the government, I will make sure that these pharmaceutical companies will be able to, no, will actually really apply for the certificate of product registration. Hindi po pwedeng hindi sila mag-apply. Otherwise, siguro may problema tayo, no, kung hindi natin sila mamamandate na mag-apply.
And of kasi, course, kasi po, I'm sorry to cut you there, Dr. Lipin. Kasi po, mahihirapan tayong kunin yung mga gamot na yon,
right,
para ibigay dun sa mga nangangailangan.
Yes, when I say mahihirapan tayong kunin, ano, kasi kailangan lang, ang makakakuha lang yan will be the hospitals na nag-apply for compassionate use, no? So it is, kung napapansin niyo, it is not available in any drugstores, no? So mga hospital lang siya available. But if makakuha tayo na may nag-apply na sila ng certificate of product registration, mabigyan sila ng kanilang CPR na approval, then now, ang mga tao, kapag kailangan nila, they can actually get it even in any drugstores, no? Para kung gusto, lalo na yung mga talagang may kaya. And then the government, yung mga ospital din naman, no, whether nag-apply sila o hindi ng for compassionate use, then they can also purchase it. Kasi kailangan ng mga tao.
What about the vaccination program, Dr. Limpin?
Yes,
how is that going to get affected if the state of calamity is lifted?
Yes, ang mangyayari niyan kung na-lift na yung state of calamity, no? Definitely lahat tayo, the way we are doing it right now, no, nakukuha natin yung bakuna ng libre. Hindi na natin pa pwede. Like you and me, maari hindi tayo makakuha ng bakuna, no? So kahit may pera ka, hindi ka pwedeng makakuha ng bakuna. You have to abide kung ano yung gusto ng gobyerno. Ngayon, with the certificate of product registration, now these vaccines will be made available. Yung mga may gusto, diba, may mga tao sa atin na medyo, kunyari, second priority, third priority, gusto na nila makakuha ng bakuna. But hindi nila makuha because they have to go through the process na in-implement ng ating gobyerno. But with CPRs, approval, then ngayon, kung gusto natin magpabakuna because we believe in the vaccine, no, then we can have ourselves vaccinated.
Mm-mm. But what about those who won't be able to afford it? The disparity between the rich and the poor and their access to these vaccines, how is that going to get affected should the state of calamity be lifted?
No, pag yung state of calamity ma-lift, ano, and then with the certificate of product registration already approved, so available ang vaccine for purchase, the government, no, kahit ano pang government institution siya, pwede makabili nung bakuna. Right now, di ba, yung LGU has to pass through the Department of Health. Di ba, kailangan may tripartite agreement pa bago maibigay available yung mga bakuna sa tao. So now, pwedeng bumili yung mga tao, and then the government, the DOH, through its program, no, can make the vaccine, can make the antiviral medications available for free, no? Sila ang magpa-purchase. Mas madaling mag-purchase, no, kapag meron ka ng certificate of product registration.
So pwedeng sabay. Hindi pa rin mangyayari yung may mahuhuli at may maiiwan dahil na-lift na itong state of calamity.
Yes.
Kung gagawin ng tama.
Yes, yan ay kung talaga, kung bibili ng gobyerno, no? Mm-hmm. But of course, no, hindi po pwedeng hindi bilhin ng gobyerno yan dahil kawawa naman. Lalo na yung bakuna, no? Magiging kawawa ang mga tao, yung mga mahihirap. And mm-hmm. the government, definitely I know, the government, the Department of Health will not allow na yung mga mahihirap, yung mga elderlies, no, ay mahuhuli sa pagkuha ng bakuna.
Finally, Dr. Lim Pin, let's talk about optics versus science. I mean, you're not just, you don't just know about this, or you don't just, this is not just happening here in the Philippines. Wherein business leaders want to project that the Philippines is open for business. We do need the much needed revenue. This is also happening all across the globe. But what does science say? Does science support the optics that all these leaders across the globe want to project?
I think science is telling us that the end of the pandemic is near in sight, pero it's not yet here. No, so we need to learn how to live with the virus, and therefore for us to be able to maybe be as free as when we were pre-pandemic, then we need to make sure first that we give maximum protection to the people. So that means that we need to have majority of our population vaccinated, hindi lamang ng primary vaccines nila, but including the booster shots. No? So this is very important. I agree. All of us will agree. Hindi tayo pa pwedeng puro matakot na lang tayo palagi sa virus, no? But ang mahirap lang, hindi ka matakot, pero alisin mo yung mga protective interventions na dapat makuha natin. Yun yung problema natin eh. Medyo nagiging bolder tayo, pero hindi natin nakikita na may mga kailangan pa tayong protection na dapat nakuhain. And I think hindi natin pwedeng pakunihin yung protection na yan. Kailangan nga mauna siya. Para sa ganon, we can be more free in the future.
Dr. Maricar Lim Pin there, immediate past president of the Philippine College of Physicians. Always a pleasure talking to you, doctor. Thanks for joining us today. Take care and you keep safe.
Yes, you too. Take care, everyone.
Thanks a lot. And from there, we're going to take a quick break. Up ahead, lawmakers approve on final reading the SIM card registration bill. Details of that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us. We're back. They're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. And we're back with more news. The incoming governors of Maguindanao del Norte and Maguindanao del Sur identified their priorities following last weekend's plebiscite that split the southern Philippine province into two. Our very own Angel Bagawisan reports.
After the historic plebiscite that ratified the split of Maguindanao, the next move for local leaders is making it happen. At the province's seat of government in Buluan, plans are being drafted as to how the division will be implemented in detail, from the budgets to the workforce. Employees were already asked as early as 3 weeks before the plebiscite to choose where they want to work.
The provincial government of Maguindanao employs between 400 to 500 regular workers, nearly all of them working here at the current capital in Buluan. Close to 200 of them have already expressed interest in moving to the new capital of Maguindanao del Norte in Dato Odinsinsua town when it is already set up.
It's an easy decision for longtime employees like Fatima, who endured the daily two-hour trip between Buluan and Dato Odinsinsua.
Makakatipid kami syempre from that time at saka yung pamasahe na rin namin. More time for our family at saka savings na din kesa mag-travel pa araw-araw.
The provincial HR says it has begun sorting the files of employees according to where they would end up. But they also assure service in the capital will not suffer during the 60-day transition.
We wanted na pagsabi na okay, ito na, uupo na ang TWG, ready na kami for the presentation. Ito lang yung gusto kong i-appeal, no? Huwag masyadong kampante yung ating mga empleyado, na lalo na yung mga lilipat na sana hindi nila magiging cause ng dahilan na nanon lang, yes, hindi na ako papasok.
But all these preparations will remain that until appointments are made for the new provincial board members who would enact the measures for the transition. The Philippine Paul body adding it will release its legal opinion on the succession of leadership in the two provinces. The capital also waiting for instructions on dividing the Maguindanao government's assets, budget, and debt. Funding will be crucial to helping officials fulfill their promise of bringing basic services closer to residents with a provincial split. For Governor Bai Maria Mangundadatu, who will automatically lead Maguindanao del Sur, the next challenge is alleviating poverty and addressing peace and order in the conflict-threatened territory.
Currently, we'll focus on tourism, but before that, of course, I have to settle some, no, yung mga rido in the area para naman ma-proceed yung development and tourism. So, kung kaya natin pagsabayin natin lahat.
Maguindanao del Norte's future government will be housed in a temporary office before construction on the new capital is completed. Prospective del Norte Governor Bai Aini Sinsuat confident crucial ports and industries in the area will aid growth.
Ang Maguindanao del Norte is meron kaming 12 municipalities pero malalaki. And marami ding mga investors. Kumbaga, we have the airport, we have Poliok Port. Lahat po ng munisipyo sa Maguindanao del Norte ay kailangan po nating i-develop. Lalong-lalo na rin yung Parang kasi yan yung seaport. So kung may seaport po tayo, tuloy-tuloy ang mga investments at lalaki pa ang mga investors sa atin.
With that, members of the so-called Family Alliance of political clans across Maguindanao still affirm they would keep their ties strong and work together, despite their province set to take off as two separate entities. Anjo Bagawisan, ABS-CBN News, Maguindanao.
The Philippine Poll Body gearing up for village and youth elections this year despite moves to postpone it. For COMELEC Chairman George Garcia, this December poll should push through as stated in the law.
We are on the go regardless of what is happening around, whether in the Senate or the House of Representatives. The money that we have for the conduct of the 2022 December 5 election is money within with the COMELEC, and therefore we cannot share that with anybody, even to the executive department.
Meanwhile, the COMELEC says the decision to disqualify Albay Governor Noel Rosal over a spending ban violation is not yet final and executory. Garcia says Rosal has 5 days or until September 24 to appeal the ruling. The COMELEC decision stemmed from a petition filed in April by defeated Legazpi City Council candidate Joseph Armohila. He sought Rosal's disqualification for reportedly approving his capacity as then mayor of Legazpi to distribute cash aid for tricycle drivers and senior citizens.
We do not want to say we are setting an example. No, maybe because there was a case filed against the respondent in this case. It's unfair to say we would like to set an example. But what we are saying is there are no, wala pong ano dito, walang privileged individuals, walang individuals that we cannot touch simply because they are so high or simply because they are so powerful. What we are saying is everything or all our laws should be made applicable to everyone. And that's why this is a warning to everyone. This is what we have been consistently saying, and this is what we are trying to prove, that in the final analysis, the long arm of the law will catch on you.
Philippine Police Chief Rodolfo Azurin cast doubt over the authenticity of the perpetual land trust granted by the Environment Department to the Masungi Geo Reserve, a Philippine conservation area. This amid the squabble between the foundation and a security agency, which is being accused of illegally occupying a portion of the area. Firearms were confiscated in a nearby hut, which is apparently owned by the agency. Azurin says they are now investigating the matter.
We are checking yung ano, yung veracity ng signature ng ano, ng tao na nagbigay ng perpetual na utilization ng protected property na yan. Dahil I find it na unusual na pag protected area usually mga 25 or 50 years ang green na grant, di ba? So bakit perpetual?
The DENR is also doing its own investigation. The department believes the land being occupied by the security agency is no longer under the protected area.
Yun ang investigahan natin kasi ang nakita natin based on sa location sa GPS na kinuha ng ating regional office, nakalabas siya doon sa claimed protected area under the MOA nung Masungi Geo Reserve at saka yung sa Lot 10 na under the name of the Republic of the Philippines.
ACT Teachers Representative Franz Castro, meanwhile, condemned the lack of action from the DENR. She says government is responsible for protecting the environment as well as its protectors. In business, the Philippine Central Bank seen to hike interest rates by 50 basis points Thursday. That would bring the BSP's overnight borrowing rate to 4.25% amid rising prices. But Moody's Analytics believes inflation in the Philippines is much easier to contain compared to that in the U.S. or in Europe.
Say it's not as high as in the U.S. or in Europe, where inflation in the U.S. and Europe was already high, and then high fuel prices compounded that. At least inflation in this part of the world was not quite so high when these supply chain constraints came on board. And then finally, in the Philippines, there's prospects of pretty strong fiscal policy over the next year with the proposals out there for increased spending on education, on public health, on infrastructure, and so forth that will help keep the economy going.
Philippine House lawmakers approve on final reading the bill which imposes the mandatory registration of mobile SIM cards. It also mandates telecommunication firms to submit a verified list of their authorized dealers and agents nationwide. Existing prepaid SIM card phone subscribers must also be registered once the measure takes effect. Only six lawmakers voted against the bill, among them Gabriela Representative Arlene Brosas, who says the bill puts a lopsided presumption that all Filipinos are considered potential criminals. Kabataan Representative Raul Manuel also voted against the bill. He sees the bill as a step in the wrong direction. The Senate's version of the measure, meanwhile, was approved on second reading during Monday's session. The passage of the SIM card registration bill at the lower house comes amid a reported increase in text scams and phishing attempts. The Philippine Agriculture Department looking at a possible oversupply of garlic in some areas. That's after Batanes Province and a town in Occidental Mindoro sought the agency's help as their garlic supplies start to rot amid a supposed lack of buyers.
Some of the garlic that was produced was also for planting materials. In Batanes, if I may say, that our regional office in Region 2 bought 20 metric tons of garlic as planting material. So it's not only for marketing, but also for production purpose. So what we're looking at right now is the volume of production of our garlic farmers. And at the same time, we will be looking into having more institutional buyers to be able to get into contract growing with our farmers.
President Marcos orders increased sugar production in the country. The move comes on the heels of the sugar importation mess that led to the possible filing of criminal charges against some key officials. Jervis Manaha now joins us with details. Jervis, what more can you tell us?
Yes, Carmina, the Board of the Sugar Regulatory Administration says price of sugar in the country will stabilize to 70 to 80 pesos per kilo by November once refineries operate in full swing. Acting Administrator of SRA David Alba and two members of the Sugar Board faced media for their first press conference this morning. They said sugar imported through Sugar Order Number 2 will start arriving by the end of October. Alba also detailed the sugar situation in the country. He said supply is tight, but we have enough. The board also announced that of the 27 warehouses inspected by the Bureau of Customs and the SRA, 21 warehouses accounting for 1.8 million bags of sugar have already been cleared. Only six warehouses with 51,000 bags remain under investigation. ALBA also said President Marcos's marching orders is to increase local production of sugar. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Jervis Manahan there. Take care, Jervis, and you keep safe. Britain's longest-serving monarch has been laid to rest. The royal family announced Monday evening Queen Elizabeth II was buried in Windsor, next to her husband of 73 years, Prince Philip, who passed away last year. That's following a private service that included a symbolic ceremonial moment where the scepter and crown were taken from the Queen for a final time. Before that, the Queen was given a state funeral at Westminster Abbey. Some 500 world leaders, dignitaries, and foreign government representatives were in attendance. The Queen's coffin then made its final journey to Windsor Castle, with thousands lining up along the procession's route to bid the final farewell to the Queen. The burial marks the end of the 10-day mourning period that saw the Queen's remains lie in state in Scotland and London. Over 70 aftershocks have jolted Taiwan following Sunday's magnitude 6.8 earthquake. At least one person was killed, while over 100 others were injured. There have been no reports of Filipino casualties as of Tuesday morning. The Philippine Migrant Workers Department says there were also no reported damage in the work sites or dormitories of overseas Filipino workers. The agency assures affected OFWs there it is ready to provide them with the necessary assistance. Over in Mexico, at least one person is reported dead following a magnitude 7.7 earthquake Monday. The powerful tremor shook buildings, sending people out into the streets of the capital. Philippine authorities say no Filipinos were hurt from that quake. The event also sparking chills on residents as it comes on the anniversaries of two powerful quakes that left thousands dead in 1985 and then again in 2017. Mexico sits in the world's most seismically and volcanically active zone, known as the Ring of Fire. At least two people are confirmed dead as Typhoon Nanmadol unleashed strong winds and record rainfall in Japan. The storm bore down on the country's southernmost island of Kyushu on Sunday. It is forecast to go through the main island of Honshu before moving out to sea by Wednesday. Close to 70 were injured, while 340,000 households were without power. Nanmadol also disrupted public transport and forced factories to halt operations. Hurricane Fiona is seen intensifying after pounding the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. The storm will likely strengthen into a Category 3 hurricane as it moves across warm Caribbean waters. Rains are expected in the Bahamas. Fiona brought heavy rains and powerful winds to the Dominican Republic, causing severe flooding and leaving several villages isolated. More than 11,000 people are without power in the country's eastern region. Fiona is the first storm to directly hit the Dominican Republic since 2018. In Puerto Rico, Fiona left at least two dead. 90% of the island still without power. Many roads are still impassable due to floods and knocked down trees. U.S. President Joe Biden has pledged to increase support to the island territory in the coming days. Here at home, several local government units suspend classes due to rains brought about by the southwest monsoon. Classes are suspended in all levels in public and private schools in Valenzuela City starting at noon today, September 20th. Work in government offices, as well as COVID vaccination activities, also suspended. The cities of Caloocan, Navotas, Marikina, Muntinlupa, Malabon, Taguig, Parañaque, Las Piñas, and Pasay, as well as Pateros, also canceling classes in all levels. Outside Metro Manila, the province of Rizal called off classes in all levels in both public and private schools. More rains expected in parts of Luzon, including Metro Manila, due to the southwest monsoon. ABS-CBN's resident meteorologist Ariel Rojas now joins us with the latest. Ariel.
Hi, good afternoon, Carmina. The southwest monsoon or habagat continues to dampen parts of Luzon and Visayas. Occasional heavy rains are still expected here in Metro Manila, Central Luzon, Calabarzon, Mimaropa, Bicol region, and parts of the Visayas. Our kapamilya need to watch out and prepare for flooding and landslides. Habagat rains usually follow a pattern where the heavy rains fall early in the morning until around 8 a.m., from late afternoon until early evening, and late evening to early morning the following day. These are punctuated by periods of overcast skies and sometimes short sunny breaks. Meanwhile, later this afternoon, Pangasinan, Cordillera, Cagayan Valley, Davao region, and Sokcerjin will also experience intense thunderstorms. The habagat will continue to affect the central part of the country until weekend. Meanwhile, a low-pressure area may enter the Philippine area of responsibility by Thursday. For now, we will continue monitoring developments in this potential disturbance. That's the latest on the weather. This is Ariel Rojas. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot. And back to the news, the Philippines joins 40 other Asia-Pacific countries in Brisbane, Australia, to discuss how to mitigate disasters in the world's most risk-prone region. The head of the United Nations Office for Disaster Risk Reduction says one of their agenda is to link disaster risk reduction with climate action. She's also hoping the conference will end in a strong political commitment on how the region will reduce vulnerability and build resilience.
We need to commit to enhancing our ambitions, because that is the only way that by 2030 we can reach a world that nobody is threatened by disasters. And this is what we need to aspire for.
The Australia Summit comes months after the UNDRR and the World Meteorological Organization launched a disaster and climate resilience hub, which aims to align efforts in disaster risk management and climate adaptation. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to visit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.